Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Deep Three episode. Today's guest is head coach at Mount St. Mary's, Dan Engelstad. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Vlad. Good to see you, and appreciate you having me on today.
Good to see you. I appreciate you coming on. It's a great honor for me. How has this period been, Dan? Because that's the most important, I think, it's on everybody's mind, every coach's, every player's mind. You know, I have friends that ask me, hey, where can I work out now? You know, what can I do now? College kids, high school kids, you know, I have coaches that have reached out to me. It's like, what do you do during this time? You know, like, it's just such a weird time. And, you know, gyms are like going to be the last thing that opens. So, you know, you as a head coach, like, how have you dealt with this?
So, you know, I've kind of tried to make it simple. Like, you know, we've had some guest speakers on and talked to our teams, and, you know, the way through this pandemic and now with everything happening in our country, like, there's going to be a big gap of people that come out of this thing either better or behind. And for us, like, the mindset is like, we're preparing for that moment when we're able to get back on the court, as opposed to just waiting for it to end. And that's kind of been our mindset, you know, not just as a coaching staff, but with our players. So, you know, it's a much different feel. You know, we've done more Zoom than I think, you know, I'm ready to get out of this and do some face-to-face personal interaction. But we've really tried to progress during this time. So for us as me as the head coach, you know, it's been a lot of deep diving into the film. It's been a lot of one-on-one conversations with our guys. It's been a lot of group conversations with our guys on Zoom, as well as team conversations. And, you know, they've stretched from just basic film study, talking about our non-negotiables, to, you know, talking about everything that's happening with our country and the racial injustice that's going on. And so we've really, you know, tried to connect. And it's not the easiest platform to do. You know, it's much easier when you can get in a room with the group and talk to them. But you know, we're trying to figure out ways to get ahead during this time. And that goes with recruiting as well. That's a big part of this. You know, I have probably 6 Zoom calls with recruits following up this conversation today, just taking them through a virtual tour of campus and walking them through how we're, you know, trying to operate in our program. And it's been that actually has been a big surprise, is that connection, you know, where you're on there for 15, 20 minutes with the young man and their family. And, you know, it's actually allowed us to probably establish some deeper connections than otherwise if it's a quick visit to on campus. So, you know, we think we've positioned ourselves well for when we're able to get back on the court. We're hopeful here in a couple weeks, but yeah, like everybody, I think we're ready to get back to work.
Yeah, I think everyone is ready. And I know Europe is moving a little bit faster right now. And I know some guys are in the gym. And I know you guys have a kid from the Czech Republic coming in, and he's been able to be in the gym. And how helpful has that been that he's been over there? And I think he's been able to work out back in the gym for, what, like a month now? You know, especially for incoming freshmen, I think that's a huge deal. You know, if you miss those 2-3 months of, you know, weight room and working out in the summer, it's you know, it can set you back a longer time, because I think from college, from high school basketball to college, you know, the game gets more physical, you know, everybody's stronger, and you know, you're just a freshman, you're 4 years younger than everybody else. So can you take me to that a little bit of how Franca's doing as far as, you know, working out? I know he's at Get Better, but just how have you guys kept in touch with him during this time?
Yeah, so we talk with him regularly. We're always on the phone with him. He jumps on our Zoom calls with us. And, you know, he's been kind of a really bright spot during this time, because I actually get to watch video of him in a gym and current. And for us, like, that's exciting. You know, I joked about, you know, I got offered to coach in the TBT this year, and I really thought about doing it just because, like, it's going to be the one basketball and we're all trying to get our fix. So to see Franta, you know, working out and getting better, you know, that's the one thing. We think he's a really unique talent. The fact that he's just so big and strong and rebounds the ball so well at his position and can shoot the ball and stretch it. The things that we've seen in his film is, you know, most recent film is his handles getting better. You know, he's starting to be able to make some counter moves, and they do a terrific job. You know, I've really enjoyed building a relationship with Coach Becko and talking to him about, you know, certain things. And it's a small world. Our women's head coach actually played at Butler the same time he did, and they were friends. So that was a big help. It gave him some ease that he's going to be around people that are going to help develop and be there for him. So it's been great to see some of the things that he's doing now, and we've sent him workouts and things that we think he can do to help position himself to help be a factor for us year one. You know, we think we have a need for somebody that can really make jump shots, stretch the floor. He's got a very, he's been coached at the highest level and played professional basketball already. So for us, like, we're excited about him and thankful that he was able to get back a month ago, because he did hurt himself at the end of the season. You know, he's coming off he tore his quad muscle. Okay. So he was out. So this time is really important. I know he was anxious to get back there. And I think at first they were just going outside and working out, and I know they've transitioned into the gym. So we're hopeful we can follow that path and get our guys back here in July. And we're hopeful he can be one of them. I know he's going to have to go through he's got to make sure that we are able to get the visa and get everything right, but we can't wait to start working with him.
Yeah, it is a complicated process, I think, for foreign kids right now. You know, I've had some friends of mine that coach at, like, a JUCO level, and they were like, hey, I have no idea if I could bring my kids back from Australia, for example, I think because Australia has a ban. And, you know, it's just different, and I think it's really going to depend from country to country. You know, in Romania, they're still not allowing flights, I think, until June 15th. You know, I have a kid that's going to a D3 school. And, you know, he's actually staying with me right now just because COVID, he can't go back home. He doesn't know if he can get his visa. His visa renewed. So he just, I-20 keeps on going, then he can just stay in the U.S. So it's a very delicate situation for foreign kids. You know, I think it's a delicate situation for coaches trying to scout foreign kids during this time. I mean, it just, when you can't just travel and go see them. I know you guys took the time to actually go to the Czech Republic and see him, right?
Yeah, so we got a chance. Coach Holland flew out there and got a chance to watch him play live and talk to him and the family. And, you know, we do our due diligence and watched a lot of film and really just dove into him as a young man. And then we flew him out and got to visit with him and his mother. And that was just terrific. And just getting a chance to meet them. And he came to a good game. He came to our homecoming game versus Bryant, which was a big win for us. And so, you know, we were – he got to see what the mound is about. So I thought that was really important, and we were thankful we were able to do that before the pandemic hit. Now I need him over here. So, you know, my dad was State Department. I already said, hey, well, I might need you to call the embassy, whatever we got to do. I need Frank. I need him over here
starting to work. We have a plug here right there. That's good.
We're going to fight for it, man. But no, it's I know it's an uncertain time in terms of travel, and we're, we're very hopeful that we can get him here as in a safe manner.
Absolutely. And then I want to talk to you about taking over a program. It's something that I talked to Jamie Christian about too. That's just something that you don't hear about very often, I think. And you know how hard it is to take over a program, to implement your own basketball philosophy, recruit your own kids. And how was your approach when you came to Mount?
Yeah, so I had been the good thing coming into the Mount is I had been part of a brand new I took over at Southern Vermont College about 6 years previous, and at that point I took over a program that won one game. The expectations were so low, it was a little bit different than the Mount situation, but it was a complete build. And so I'd been through that before, and the things that we did to try to achieve that success. So, having been a head coach for 5 years, and even though it was a different level, I tried to pull on those experiences for the Mount. Now, this was a different situation. Coach Christian, as you talked about, just took over at GW. He was here at the Mount, and he had great success. He took this program to another level. And, for us, we were – I took over the program and he had done some great things, but what had happened in our league is a lot of the elite players that he had, had transferred out. And that's something that was, it was a culture thing. It was happening all across college basketball. So for us, the first thing that when I looked at the situation, I said, look, we have to recruit young men that we feel, we can grow with, we can make sure that we're bringing them here, we're developing them. Now, it's been a challenge, Vlad, it's been probably a bigger challenge than I anticipated. We didn't have an upperclassman on the roster when I took the job. So for us, like, we're trying to build it in a family dynamic, but also trying to make sure that we're bringing in young men every year that can help elevate our program and get better. And, we've taken some strides. You know, we made some, you know, for us this past year to the second year, we were able to, you know, make the playoffs and, some steps that we needed to take as a program, but we're nowhere near where we want to be. I'm really excited about our group. I love our core. They understand what we're trying to do and build, and we brought a really talented recruiting class in, including Franta. And so we're looking forward to putting it all together and taking that jump and becoming one of the elite teams in this league and where we're competing for championships every year. But it's never going to be quick. You know, it takes time. You got to build it in the way that you want. And, you know, and I've done a lot of learning over the last couple of years. I've looked back at year one and year two, and there are things, and that's what this pandemic has forced us all to do, is kind of look inward and different ways that we can improve. And, so there are a lot of things that I look forward to being able to implement when we get back. And, just talking to our guys over Zoom, it's hard to get that feel, that interpersonal connection over Zoom, but you can sense their voice is getting stronger. And as you know, Vlad, like, the biggest thing with culture and building a team is, like, it's got to be everybody. It's got to be the players. It's got to be the managers. And just to hear their voices and to hear, you know, what they're about. Like, we want to build a program on togetherness, on family, on, you know, discipline and hard work. And to hear the guys kind of talk to each other, because a player-led team will always beat a coach-led team. That's going to be the case always. And, I think we're getting closer to that. And I just can't wait to put it all together.
Absolutely. And to go back to transfer culture, talking about how do you feel about it? Because, okay, transferring up, honestly, it's something fairly new. It didn't happen when I was in college. But then also I have my personal issue right there is transferring down with the coaches, you know. So the coaches, the high major coaches, are really okay with, you know, oh, I can get a kid from, you know, the Mount. He's really good. You know, I can take him up. But then once one of their kids wants to leave, or they go to another high major program, you know, like Purdue had this issue, and to me, that's, it's just not fair to, you know, to the mid majors, to lower D1 schools, where they can actually get a very good player, a very good student athlete from a top program, you know, or just some kind of situation where, but they're not happy their players are leaving. And I mean, to me, that's a little bit selfish. You know, it has to be a two-way street. You know, if you're going to go and take players from the Patriot League, from the NEC and any other conference, the MAC, whatever, and you have to be able to, you know, let your players leave too if they choose to. And if it is to another high major program, so be it. But to me, it has to be a two-way street. How do you feel about this transfer culture?
Yeah. Well, I'll just start out by saying I was not happy that you transferred to American. I'll have to say that now. As an assistant, and I had the scout for American, you were a pain in the ass to guard. That shuffle staggered. You coming off staggers at your size and banging shots.
Twirl and twirl hold. I can draw those plays up.
That's what I'm saying. They put you on the block, would post you up. You'd come off staggers. Like, what the heck is this, man? I got – they're 5'4" coming off banging threes, and it's such a complex issue, because, you know, you want what's best for the student athlete. You want them to chase their dreams. It is their right to do that. But at the same time, you know, I'm trying to recruit, and I want this to be about completion. Like, I want our guys to want to come here and get a degree and graduate from Mount St. Mary's. And that's tough too, because, you know, there is the guys that aren't playing, that you want them, like, similar to yourself. You weren't playing in the role what you thought of George Mason. And for our guys too, like, and you have to have those honest conversations and be like, hey, like, you can stay, but this might not be, you know, the role that you want might not be there, and just be honest and transparent with them. And, so we've had guys that have transferred that are looking for other opportunities this year. And, but it is, you know, it's going to be very interesting, Vlad, if they do change the not having to sit out a year. You know, that's where it becomes the wild, wild west. Like, everybody's going to be in handshake lines, shaking hands, being like, hey, like, hey, I know you.
hey, at the game, what about next year?
Like, here's my card. Like, it's going to be, you know, it will really change it for the low to mid majors. And, you know, we work really hard at evaluating and putting a lot of effort into relationships. And we want to build a culture where it's really hard for them to leave, because they know it's built on genuine trust. And so we're really fighting hard for that. And that's part of the culture now too, is like fighting for the guys and recruiting them, you know, every day. And that's, you know, we're, like I said, we're really excited about the core that we have are now upperclassmen. But, you know, we've also, you know, I've seen it firsthand, you know, what the transferring, and it hasn't been, like, if you do the research and you've seen it, the transfer ups are risky. You know, if you're in a situation where you're producing, like, you have to be very conscientious of that. Like, 'cause you have a chance to keep producing at a high level and improve. And if you go change your circumstance and you're not in that situation at the next level, just from, you know, everything that I've gathered, like, you can actually hurt your chance to play, you know, whether it be at the summer league level, you know, top leagues overseas. Like, production is valued. And that's, you know, that's the one thing that, you know, it works for some, but there's a lot of guys that I think if they would do it over, they would stay in the situation that they were in if they're producing. So that's what we're dealing with now. And that's why the transfer portal is so big.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they do, you know, change the rule, I think that's, you know, it just becomes like a professional basketball. For example, in Europe, there's a lot of one-year contracts. So I feel like it just becomes that, you know, it's going to be year to year. It's going to be hard for college coaches to plan ahead. You know, it's going to be like, what do I have this year? Okay, let's see what I have next summer, because you never know, you know.
It's free agency.
I mean, yeah, exactly. It's just too dangerous, I think, you know. And going back to my situation, what you were saying is when I went to Mason, you know, we had different expectations. My first year was actually better. And then the second year, just everything changed once Will Thomas left, you know, and Will and I, you know, I think we complement each other pretty well. That's why I think I was playing like 15, 18 minutes as a freshman, you know, but things changed in my sophomore year. And I just didn't see that coming back, you know, and I knew I wanted to give myself a chance at the NBA. I knew I can always go back and, you know, play in Europe because of my passport and because I knew I could play. You know, I mean, I was proving it every summer with national team. It was just a matter of fit. And then when I did transfer, you know, I think Coach Lowe was at NC State and he called me and he's like, hey, we love you. It's like, we have Brendan Costner. He's about to graduate. You can redshirt a year and then that's your spot. And like you said, it just, it wasn't what I was looking for. You know, like, in my mind, can I play in the ACC for a team like NC? I thought I can play for a school like NC State. Absolutely. Especially if I redshirt a year, where I get my body right for that kind of, you know, physical play. Absolutely. Was it what I needed or what I really wanted at that point in my life? I just don't think so. You know, and I think I surprised some people because, you know, I was looking at Denver, Lehigh, you know, Lehigh, CJ. So I was like, okay, well, you know.
He's got a lot of shots that he's got to get up.
yeah, I mean, it could have been a deadly combo. I mean, nobody.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't go there.
But, you know, it was just a matter of, you know, what I really want. And, you know, D.C. has always been home for me, basically. You know, just I was there in high school. It's when I came by myself. And it was just, you know, once I went to Maryland, it was a no-brainer. You know, they recruited me in high school, too. But, you know, just like a lot of teenagers these days, you know, it's like.
Well, think about the league at that time. Think about yourself. Think about CJ. Think about Muscala. We brought in Malcolm Miller, who plays for the Raptors now. You know, that's a lot of professional players. You know, Lafayette had Heinrichs. I think he might have been right behind you. But it was just it was a great time to be in the league because it was so competitive. But also that window to go try to get a championship was tough because we're going against pros every night and yourself included. It was a good time for that league.
There's a funny story about, you know, Dave Dudzinski. He was freshman my senior year. And fast forward to about 6 years. And so about 3 or 4 years ago, I was playing in Romania. He signed in Bucharest. And he was playing one of my best friend, Cam Long, right? And we ended up playing the finals. And Cam and I just talked all the time. You know, I've always wanted to play with him, actually. You know, I told my coach in Romania, I was like, hey, can you take a look at him? You know. You know, we played together at Mason. We knew each other from high school, you know, when he was at Freedom and I was at St. John's. And they had David at the four. And I told Cam, I was like, just after the regular season, I was like, I have a mental advantage over him. I can see it. Cam was like, yeah, he's scared of you. And the only reason he was scared of me is because he caught me as a senior in college and he was a freshman. You know, and it's just funny how life works, you know, right? And I mean, Dave's a great player right now. You know, he's playing in Belgium. He's somewhat similar to me. And then, you know, I watched him live a few times, having a great success in Belgium. You know, it was awesome. But it was just funny thing. Cam was like, yeah, he's just scared of me. He's like, he kills everybody else in the league. But once he faced you for some reason, it's just like he doesn't produce.
I don't think it was weird.
I was like, why, man? Come on. Like,
I don't have a lot of respect for you. I don't know if Dave's scared of anybody, man. So that's a compliment to you, because his motor is different. And, you know, just watching his game develop over the years since he's been a pro, like, his perimeter skill has gotten so much better. And like you said, he's playing more at the four now, and he's putting it on the deck a little bit, and his body's changed. And I'm really proud of him. And I had the good fortune to coach like him in the TBT. And so I've been able to keep that relationship going. And that's been, you know, he would always, you would guarantee winning the first two games in the TBT with Dave, just because that motor was just, he was going to play harder than you. And it's been great to see it translate in some of the top leagues.
Absolutely.
I'm glad that he's doing well. I got to talk to him now. I got to tell him that he's got to get over this this Vlad curse, because he's got to get a win at some point.
I don't think we'll play against each other anytime soon, so I think it's over, unless we go play a pickup or something. But no, it was just a funny, you know, funny story, because I'm huge on the mental side of the game, and I was like, there's no way. I'm like, there's no way, Cam. But I just felt it, like, during the game, just like watching him playing on tape, and I was like, oh my God. I was like, this kid is like, you know, I remember him as a freshman. I was like, I'm gonna have my hands full right now, you know, because he can really shoot it. And, you know, he's strong enough, and he goes really aggressive, you know, to the offensive glass. And I was like, you know, just, I was like, oh my God. And then, you know, he was just not as aggressive. And I told Cam, I was like, we played them that year. They didn't beat us one time. It was like 8-0 or something like that. But we played him the Romanian Cup semifinals or quarterfinals, semifinals. We played him a bunch of times. And I was like, Cam, like, what's going on with Dave? I just thought he was, like, unhappy or something, like, at the club. Or he's like, no, he's just like, he has, like, a mental thing. Like, he just – when I was like, why? Like, I don't remember how I played in college against him, but, like, I remember him being a freshman, so I could see that happening.
I remember how you played against us during that time. So.
Yeah, but it was it's funny, because I think basketball leads you to so many things and so many paths. And for me, mentally, it's been, you know, I think, you know, I had a mental coach. I worked Brian Levinson for a long time, and that helped me take, you know, my mental game to another level. And
mindfulness.
Do you guys do any mental training or stuff like that?
Yeah, we do, and I got kind of introduced to it during my time at Holy Cross. We had a sports psychologist, and he's one of the tops in the profession. He's written books, and George Mumford is his name, and he would come and work with our guys on meditation, on visualization. He would come and talk to, you know, them on different ways, just like your breath and, you know, being able to, you know, get yourself into that next play and be present in that moment. And that's something that we've tried to do here at the Mountain. We got to keep doing a better job of it. And, you know, the president of our university, his wife is she's into it as well. She came and spoke with our guys a few times. And, you know, for us, like, that's something that we're really going to make a big push with this season, is just getting our guys in a good state of mind to, you know, to be able to, you know, make the steps in our program we want to make. And I do believe that, you know, that sports psychology is such a big component of it. And, you know, that's something that we're going to work really hard on in our program.
Yeah, I mean, especially during this time, I feel like it was just, like I said earlier, you know, it was a great time to reflect and look at what happened the past year, you know, watch video and stuff like that, and also just become stronger mentally. I remember Coach D at St. John's, when I got to the U.S., you know, and I was skinny. I think I was like, what, 6'9", 175. And, you know, it was just like, you're like, you know, mental is to physical, like four is to one. And he just stuck with me since then. You know, it was like, I can win this battle, you know, no matter who I'm fighting against, you know, if I'm just stronger mentally. But it doesn't mean just to be stronger mentally. You know, I think to be mental, you know, it means, you know, doing your homework, you know, knowing when a guy can go left or right. You know, knowing what to expect, and it's something that I've done. I've used Synergy for so many years. You know, it's like, because I'm not quicker than most guys that I play, especially, you know, the quicker fours, the more athletic fours, and the older I get, it's harder. But if I know that you're going to go left 75% of the time, and when you go left, I know you're going to pull up, like, it's just, I'm there. I'll be there. You know, I'll contest it. You know, but if you go in with your eyes closed, it's a whole different ballgame. What is your approach to scouting? You know, in Europe, I've had all, you know, no scouting, 2 hours of scouting a day. What is your approach? Because I feel like for college basketball, it's different. You know, you don't have that much time. You play it every 2-3 days. And you also have to work on improving your players, you know, especially the freshman, sophomore. So what is your approach to that?
Yeah, we are very detailed with our scouts. And I've set up our program, you know, different than some is, you know, I have very talented coaches. I know you're familiar with Coach Holland and Coach Matt, and these are really, Coach Graves. I don't know if you've met Coach Graves yet, but, you know, I have guys that are really good teachers of the game. So try to put them in positions and get their voice heard as much as possible too. So I've set it up in coordinators. So everybody has a piece of scouting during, you know, an opponent. So one of our assistants will do specials out of bounds, break that down. We'll have one who's just in charge of personnel and break that down, and, you know, different areas and strengths and weaknesses. And we'll present that to the group 2 days in advance and talk about personnel, and we'll talk about what they're going to run offensively and how we're going to guard it. And then the following day, we're going to talk about, you know, different things that they're going to do defending us. And then we'll also talk about, you know, the out of bounds and special. So we have it kind of broken down into 4 segments. My staff is very involved in that, but it's a lot of work. You know, when you have that type of where everybody has a piece in it, like, they've got to, because I'm a firm believer, and we want to dive into the very nitty details of it to try to, you know, create separation. And so that's kind of how we do our scouting. And then after our practice the day before the game, the team will present on the individuals. So we'll have, you know, the matchup, the point guard that's guarding the point guard will get up in front of the group and talk about, you know, strengths and weaknesses, and we'll put a couple, you know, a little clip in there. So, you know, we do focus on us a lot. You know, we want to make sure we're not doing too much of it, but we also want to make sure that we're covering all our bases, where we're not going to get beat on, you know, an opponent's out of bounds play, or we're going to be able to guard the actions that they're going to run. And when you have a 1 day turnaround, you know, sometimes it becomes less about every play that they run. You know, Coach Matt will, you know, being the defensive coordinator, he'll know everything that the opponent's running. He'll be able, you know, he's very detailed on it, but at the same time, okay, so what do we have to get across to our guys? So it might be actions, you know, because teams may try to put different variations. So at that point, you know, how are we going to guard, you know, the back screen, ball screen? How are we going to guard the staggered here? Like, what are we going to do when they throw it in the block, and are we going to double down? And so, you know, those are the type of conversations that we have, especially for a quick turnaround.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Coach Wooden's, and I'm a huge fan of scouting, but at the same time, you know, just reading, you know, from his books, and, you know, listening, trying to find as much stuff on him as possible. And it was fascinating to me that, you know, a guy can win so many championships and doesn't scout. Yeah. And at the same time, I was like, I get it. I was like, I totally understand it. Well, once you're talented, of course, you have talented players, but if you just focus on yourself every day, I mean, I can see it. You know, you're guarding everything in practice. So you kind of know the actions, like you said. You know, you got to guard a certain type of action, like a ball screen, back screen, a certain way. You know, and you know, if the principles are there, like the defensive principles are there, and the guys have those, like, just engraved, and it's like, okay, I know what happens when I'm on weak side. You know, and
that's gonna be the fun part this year, is because we, you know, like I said, we were playing 6 freshmen 2 years ago, and we were the youngest team in America. We were. There was no other team that didn't have a junior, senior on the roster. And like, to see them be able to now talk through it and understand, like, different rotations and understanding, you know, a quick one as opposed to a full hedge, and understand, like, to see the guy starting to grasp that, you know, I think we'll be able to help bring it along further. But, you know, there is a component of, like, you have to get better. You have to get better at yourself, and you have to improve. But, you know, I think part of that is understanding all those concepts and practicing those concepts, so when the game time comes, you know how to – we want to be a defensive minded team. Like I want to play in transition more. And to do that, you got to get stops and rebounds. So for us, like that's something that we're really put a large emphasis on. But yeah, I know Coach Wooden is obviously one of the greatest to ever do it, a brilliant basketball guy, but it does help to have Abdul-Jabbar, Walton. It does help to have a lot of Hall of Famers, I'll tell you that. Like we probably focus on ourselves a little bit more.
Exactly. No, but so it's something that you mentioned actually. So if you have freshmen, would you do more or less scouting, you say?
Yeah, I think it's we tried to do like keep it more simple, and that's probably an area that I, looking back at it, I should have been better at. It should have kept it even more simple. We tried to give them a lot, and it might have been a lot too fast because you know if you did it, and there were times where we would do that and try to give them everything, and at some points you know they threw it all up, you know, because it was probably too much, but you know we're at a point now where they really have a good grasp of the concepts that we want. So, you know, you look back at it and I'm glad we gave them, you know, a lot of information because I think they now can retain it and now help teach the younger guys in our program. And that's what a program is about. You know, I'm sure you the same way at American your senior year, I'm sure you're trying to help out the freshmen and that's what, you know, ultimately we're trying to build here. But, you know, we did less of it year one than we do now. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to, you know, be able to move through some of the scouting stuff a little bit quicker because our guys are able to grasp it and retain it.
Yeah, absolutely. I just remember I'm so thankful that when I went to St. John's, I had Coach D there because he ran practice just like a college practice.
Mm-hmm. I saw those practices.
And it was the transition was smoother for me, I feel like it. And then when I was talking to some other guys, of course, at Mason, we had guys come from DeMatha, from, you know, or like Cam Long from Freedom. So, you know, the base was there. But I just feel like it's such a wide range of the way high school coaches coach, right? And I've seen it. And I'm so thankful, again, for going to St. John's as far as Coach D was. You know, we were doing shell drills. So I knew when, you know, I was supposed to come from the weak side and take a charge or just be there, or, you know, it was like, because he wasn't blocking shots, so he told me early, you know, you got to be there, you got to be early, because, you know, if you're not in that help side early and trying to meet somebody at the rim, you're not going to help your team. And it was just so many things that he taught me, you know, like, or like you're talking about, like, ball screen defense, and I just feel like we ran into a college-type practice, and it just helped me a ton. Just like you said, with understanding, you know, like, I wasn't thrown too much. I just didn't feel like I was thrown too much. And, you know, when I stepped on the floor at Mason, it was like following Campbell, he won the Final Four, right?
I played against him in high school. He was my rival.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. With Fowlerin, you know, he's a friend of mine too. And we had battles, but my senior year, we were really good. We had a player that, you know, wasn't all met. You remember Jerome Habel? I know he was a little bit before your time, but he was one of the best players. He ended up getting a full scholarship to Florida State. It didn't work out, and he ended up at San Diego State. He's had, like, a long pro career over in Tijuana, Mexico. But what a special talent, and we were ranked in the top 20 in the post that year. And we lost four games, three of which were to Fowlerin and his Springbrook team. And one game we were up 10 with, like, 4 minutes to go, and I was a point guard and only primary ball handler. And I don't foul out. I never fouled out, and I was having one of my better games, but I remember I had like a retreat dribble and I pushed the ball out ahead and one of their guys stepped out. I was like, he's not going to take the charge. And I got my fifth foul. We ended up, I think we were up 10 with like 4 minutes to go. We ended up losing by 10. We didn't have any ball handlers. They pressed and it was a wrap. And so I'm still salty to Fowler and his Springbrook team. So
yeah, no, he was a great player. And I mean, he's still playing right now in Italy, in the A2 and, I mean, you can just see that Mason team was stacked, you know, with especially Fowlerin and Will. And
Tony Skin, that Final Four team was special.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't catch Tony. It was from Final Four team. You know, we had Jordan Card at the point guard. We had JV, John Vaughn. You know, what was special about that team, I feel like it was all kind of like local guys, you know, in the Maryland, the DMV, right? So I think that's what bonded them in some ways. And, you know, to this day, it's, you know, there's still a group chat going on from those years. And it's just a lot of fun. And I actually wanted to play with them in the TBT last year. I just wasn't ready physically, coming off the hepatitis. And then I know they asked me to play this year, but I feel like this year, you mentioned the TBT, right? I feel like it's
happening.
It's going to be crazy. I feel like it, because everybody wants to hoop now. It's like, everybody. I haven't played since February. Like, I need to play. So it's like Floyd Mayweather has a team now. It's pretty crazy. It's going.
I think they're announcing the field this week. And I was, like I said, I was offered to coach, and I think it's one of the better TBT teams out there. It's comprised of, like, Courtney Fortson's playing it. They got Michael Ojo. They got they have. Lelaine the old Spurs draft pick. They have a deep team, and it was very tempting. So but yeah, there's going to be less teams. It's going to be, I think, 24 teams, so there's going to be, it's a lot easier chance to go win three games and get a couple million dollars.
You say you coached near before, right?
Yeah, I loved it. It was
the process. Yeah.
So the new coach who's going to coach this year's team, I spoke with him yesterday, kind of how that works. And that was such a unique experience for me. And, getting a chance to coach, great pros. You probably know some of the names. Like, I got to coach a lot of the Indiana guys, like Jordan Hulls was on the team, Christian Watford, Will Sheehy, James Thomas, who was a longtime pro, played in the NBA for a while. Just guys that had done it at such a high level. And for me, being a young head coach at the Division III level, like coming in, a lot of it was just conversation. We were able to create a dialogue, and I called everybody up and broke down their game and just talked to them, like, kind of where I saw them fitting in. And, at that point, they're coached at such a high level. So it becomes a conversation. You come in, you walk through the stuff you want to put in. For us at the time, we only had a day or two, so we put in some basic European ball screen continuity, put in some out of bounds plays. And the thing that was just amazing is just like how quick they pick everything up. Things that take, potentially a week, you just tell them one time and they've run that action or have guarded it 100 times, in the last couple months. So for them to be able to just pick things up on the fly was such a for me, that was eye-opening. And, the difference was the egos, like managing the egos. Everybody is a pro. Everybody wants to play. And, so you got to make some tough decisions about playing, because everybody's, it's like coaching an all-star team. So that was one of the bigger challenges of it. But just trying to get a group together in a short amount of time. I know the D.C. area well. I coached with Glenn Ferrello, the head coach of Paula Six. We coached together. So it felt like a, really good AAU experience. It felt like the guys were, they're having fun, you win the game and they're going through the bracket, and there was something, I know the money was there, but it was something pure about it. And it really was a great basketball experience for me, where I learned a lot from those guys, and just what, we would talk through actions to guard, and we would practice probably 45 minutes and walk through plays and do stuff, and then they would all have their individual routines that they would do to get shots up. So we treated it like a 2-day training camp when we did it. And we had a good run. We got to the Elite Eight twice, and, got to the 16 in 3 years that I did it. So it was a great experience.
That's awesome. And now for the last part, I just want to talk about recruiting with you, and just if you can share some stories, what was your best recruiting and like the worst recruiting, stories that you've had to deal with, because I've heard a lot of them from different coaches, players, and I'm like, there's no way to happen. It's like, it is one of those things that it's so different. I think especially for my European listeners, it's going to be different, because there's no recruiting like at that level in Europe.
So I'll give you one that changed kind of the landscape of the NEC, where I coach now.
Yeah.
I talked to one of the assistants on this, it was right when I got into the profession. I was a young 22-year-old, was one of the youngest Division I assistants at the time. The reason why Coach Brown, hired me was, I could afford to take the $5,000 in grad school at the time. Obviously everything's kind of elevated, but I still was on the road. I was recruiting, and I wanted to recruit them, the D.C. area and the area that I knew. And you probably know the name Jamal Owasawer. So Jamal went to the same school as Fallon went to, Springbrook High School, won multiple championships. And I remember watching him all summer. And like some guys, you know, it's so much basketball. Like you can over-evaluate. You know, you can just watch a guy too much and be like, you can nitpick at their game. And I love Jamal, but, you know, I was like, I like him. And, you know, kind of I feel like a lot of people felt that way. And he didn't have a whole lot of recruitment, you know, before high school season. And then his high school season started and he just dominated. You know, going into a senior year, he dominated. And then and we had a scholarship open up. We didn't have one. It opened up. And so I was like, I was all over him. Like it was, I've never recruited a guy harder. I'm at everything. I'm, you know, official visit. I'm going to pick him up with the family, built a relationship up, knew all his high school people already. And then Georgetown got involved. Xavier got involved. A bunch of guys got involved, but he was still 6'5". So he was undersized and they didn't end up pulling the trigger. In terms of offering him a scholarship. So it then comes down to us and like LIU and some other teams. And I'm thinking, oh, we got this done. And he's getting to a point where he's close to commit. And Coach Brown, the head coach, and I go down to do a visit at the high school. And we didn't realize that it was, because we weren't trying to do anything illegal, but we didn't realize it was a quiet period. So we weren't actually allowed to do it. And so we had this great visit and we're thinking, we're like, it's done. We're about to lock it up. And then some of the other schools found out that we did the visit and we're like, oh shoot. Like we didn't try it. We weren't trying to do anything wrong, yeah. But they used that against us and we ended up signing Christian Gina, who had a great career and at the mound and a really good player. But you know, Jamal was the player of the year for 3 years in a row and won three different championships back to back to back at LIU and changed kind of the landscape. And I remember like we called him and told him that we were going another direction and he wasn't happy and ended up going in the league and changed kind of the landscape of it all. He was the best player and it wasn't even close. So you know, it's amazing how it can change just, you know, one misstep or and you know how valuable recruiting is. And he changed that whole culture at LIU and was a big piece to that. So that one still stings. You know, he could have been at Mount St. Mary's and, you know, we won a championship with Coach Brown. Yeah. If he had come to the Mount, there would have been about 4, 5, 6. But it's amazing how the world works. Maybe Jamie's not the head coach. You know, who knows how it all worked out the way it was supposed to. But that's one of the bad ones. The other a good one was, you know, Malcolm Miller, who I saw play as a junior in high school and was like, hey, this guy's lanky and kind of, you know, doesn't really – his coordination's not great, but you know, probably a good Montgomery County kid. And then watched him play and saw him keep getting better. And you know, our coach saw a game where he made a couple threes and dunked on him. And now, you know, Malcolm was didn't have a Division I offer going into the summer. No one knew about him, and now he's in the NBA and through development. And he's a great story of you know, getting to a good mid-major and developing and getting better. And now he's, you know, making millions of dollars playing the game. And so that was, you know, that we worked really hard to try to get Malcolm with us and he's been involved with our program now. Malcolm works out at the Mount every day in the summer and, you know, we're thrilled that he feels comfortable enough with the relationship we built with him and the fact that he knows that he can get developed, that he comes back and plays with our guys. So
I was going to say, it's good for your guys, you know, to have an NBA guy just right there in the gym with them, you know, all summer long. You know, I remember at American we had, after my junior year, you know, I was working out with Steph Curry and Wes Matthews because they were just in the gym. They were training for the draft and stuff. And for the second workout, they were just in there shooting at America, you know, and I was in the gym. And then I asked them, and I was like, hey, can I work out with you guys? And they're like, yeah. And, you know, that was going Steph after he just finished off at Davidson and West at Marquette. So it was just – it was just a different, you know, seeing those guys get ready for the NBA and knowing they're probably going to be first round picks and, you know, their process to everything was pretty amazing.
The thing with Malcolm too, is they get to see kind of his approach to the workouts and what he does and how he works through them. And, you know, I think it's helpful too, that he sees him working out with our staff, you know, our staff, you know, he chooses to come work out with us. So,
That's awesome. But that's how you build a relationship. And I think that's how you recruit at the end of the day. It's just the relationship, you know, it's about a fit. And it's a funny recruiting story. And it wasn't crazy funny when I looked at it because I wanted to go to West Virginia. I was a beeline guy. I mean, from the end of my – he started recruiting
me. You would have fit well in that system.
He recruited me the start and end of my sophomore year. And after my junior year, he came to Romania, met my mom. He spent about 2 weeks in Romania watching me at the European Championships under 18. I know Gonzaga was there too. But Coach Beeline was there, and I didn't pay attention to anybody. You could call me, and I was like, I'm going to West Virginia. I don't know about you, but you can call me. Coach K could have called me, and I would have been, hey, sorry, man. It was just the relationship that I built with Coach Beeline, how honest he was at all times. Good game, bad game, he texted me, like, especially during the European Championship, you know, he was in the stands watching, and he'd be like, I thought you did this well, you didn't do that. You know, he wasn't like just, oh, my God, I really want you to come to West Virginia. You're an amazing player. You know, he was just honest with me, and I like that. And then I go to the visit at West Virginia, and, you know, we sit down at the end, and he's like, you know, I really want you to come here. And at that point, I was like, I was ready to pull a trigger. I was like, yeah, I want to come here too. So, and then he says, you know, but we have a problem. I was like, oh, my God, what? And he said, it's just the business of things, and that's how I learned how hard his business can be. He wasn't allowed to offer me his last scholarship at that point until Patrick Patterson committed somewhere else. He had one scholarship open because he signed John Flowers from Riken with the first scholarship. And the second
one, I remember John, yep.
Yeah, and the second one, he's like, first of all, Patrick doesn't want to even come here. You know, he's told us, you know, we're not in his top five, but he hasn't decided.
Why do you have to pivot?
You know, he hasn't decided, and, you know, just looking back, I think I should have waited. But, you know, the way he phrased things, and I think I was just disappointed. And but, yeah, he said he's
going to be the pit snoggle replacement.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I mean, all the video he was doing, like, you know, side by side, it was me and pit snoggle. He's like, that's it. You know, he told me, he's like, you're going to register your freshman year. We're going to get you really strong. You're going to be in that five spot at the top of the key where you can make plays. You know, you can shoot the ball. You can do a lot of things. And I was super excited about it. And I mean,
I played in that offense, so I'm very familiar. And having that versatile five is the you know, that's the key.
Yeah, it was a cool opportunity. I mean, when I went to play with them, you know, even Joe Alexander was there. Deshaun Butler was there, I think. And then Joe Mazzulla. And after the scrimmage, they're like, we're just sitting down. And Beeline was like, how do you do? He's like, it's playing with Kevin again. He's like, it's like Pisnago, but like he can be a little better during like at times because, you know, Pisnago wasn't so, quick or stuff like that. So he was just after the workout, I was like, oh man, like the guy's actually liking me. You know, we had a good visit. I was like, oh, it's going to be great. And then and he was,
I can't take it.
Yeah, then he's like, I can't do that. But, I mean, in looking back at that, I should have waited and, you know, I should have been more patient. But I think this is the disappointment of it. And, you know, Mason was really hard, recruiting very hard. And I just didn't want to wait until March, April. I think it was just different back then than now, you know, to wait until March, April to sign, especially as a senior. And when I had offers on the table, it was, you know, yeah. I had like four offers and I was like, I really want to go West Virginia, but what if, you know.
Well, you had a different path than you had anticipated, but, you know, you end up being a great player. And
oh, absolutely.
Such a high level, and that's it worked out for you.
Absolutely. But that was my first goal. When I transferred, I called Beeline. I was like, do you have room in Michigan, man?
You want me?
I was like, do you want me in Michigan? Because I still want to play for you. Like, but he's amazing. You know, I've talked to Pat, they're just amazing family still, you know, they're, you know, really honest people. That's what I appreciate from them from back up. But that was just my recruiting story. Yeah. But Dan, I really appreciate your time. I don't want to hold you on longer. Hopefully I'll see you soon once things clear up. I love to come to Mount and, you know, see your guys, yep. Meet your guys and, you know, see how you guys build.
Yeah, I'd be honored to have you come talk to them and maybe it'll be over Zoom, but, you know, we appreciate, you know, all you've done. And I know you've been, a big advocate for a lot of players over there to get them in good situations. And that's, we appreciate that. And I know I can't wait to get you to campus and so you can see it firsthand with what we're trying to do here. And let's just stay in touch, man. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
All right, buddy.